Just as one destination is a car and depends upon the collection of parts, so there are certain conventional teaching being in dependence upon the ingredients. An extract from Mambu Chavala's writings. Searching for reality through space, on finding not the periphery and the center, all perception ceases completely. Likewise, through a total search of mind and phenomena, one finds not even an atom of essence. Since the search of mind is not found, not seeing anything is seeing the reality. An extract from Saint Sara's writings. By entering into a devoid of compassion, one will not find the Supreme Path. At the same time, by meditating upon compassion alone, one will not attain liberation, but remain in samsara. Whosoever is capable of grasping the unity of the two will not remain in samsara, nor abide in personal nirvana. Samadhi Raja Sutra, King of Concentration Sutras. Your phenomenon is thus. Aranigarjuna's Mula Madhya Kariga Phanaman Vasul the Middle Way. Through ceasing common afflictions, nirvana is achieved. Common afflictions arise from distorted perceptions. These arise from elaborations of grasping of true existence. Elaborations cease or abide or into emptiness. Neither the aggregates, nor different from the aggregates. Aggregates don't depend on him, nor is he dependent on them. The Tathagata does not possess aggregates versus Tathagata. That which dependent originates is posited to be empty of independent existence. Having dependently designated, this is a middle way. Since there is no phenomenon that is not dependently originated, there is no phenomenon that is not empty. Aranigarjuna Srodhamana Prashna Garland. If the person is not earth, not water, not fire, not wind, not space, not also consciousness, and not all of them, where is the person out of those? Just as a person is not truly existent because of being an aggregation of the six constituents, so each constituent also is not truly existent as the aggregations of their own constituents. Aranigarjuna's Bodhicitta Vivarana, commentary of Bodhicitta. Those who understand this entry is a form of phenomenon, it also conforms to the law of karma and its results. There is more amazing than amazing, there is more wondrous than wondrous. Aradeva's Chattusatagas Shastra Nama Karigam. When dependent arising is seen, ignorance does not occur. Thus, through all efforts, trying to find the searching. Guide with the view, the four mindfulness, the soul's gets and gets. So this one is very powerful. So what it is saying here is that you're watching the magical illusion, magical show. When you watch a magical show, so in what way what you're seeing is described as a magical show? Because what you're seeing and the reality, there's a discrepancy. There's a discrepancy between what you see and the reality. So the reality does not really tally with what you are seeing there. So likewise, the seventh Dalai Lama is saying that imagine that you are at the crossroad with six roads joining. At the center of the crossroad with six roads joining. So if you're at the crossroad, then what will you see? You will see all different cars, different kind of people, and these whatnot, all different things you will see there at the crossroad, right? And actually we are 24/7 and not 24/7. So say if you sleep for 8 hours, then how many hours left? 16 hours. 16 hours a day you are at the crossroad of the six roads joining. What are six roads? Your eyes, all the five senses plus the mental, six. So you communicate with the world through these six consciousnesses. You communicate with these, you travel to these, the world through these six doors. And what you perceive of these, through these six doors, what you perceive of this, through these six doors, they all have contradiction or discrepancy. How they see, how you see, and how they really exist is just the opposite. And how you see is as though like there is something really there. And in reality, they're all just magical show. They're all just your mental creation. You are aware that it was your mental creation. In actuality, nothing's really there from the object side, right? So what you are seeing is deceptive, what you are hearing is deceptive, what you are tasting is deceptive, what you are feeling is deceptive, and what you are mentally seeing is all deceptive. All these things, whatever you interact in the world, they are all just deceptive. So therefore, they are all like magical show. Magical show. So the seventh element is warning us or informing us that always be mindful what you are seeing, what are you hearing, what are you smelling, what are you tasting, what are you touching, what are your mental thinking. They are all just magical illusion life. Be aware of that. Don't forget that they are magical illusion life. So they are all just hazy, dualistic perceptions. Hazy meaning they're not really there. It's just your mind creating it. If your mind creates it, then it becomes like a cloud. Cloud is so hazy. There's no sharp line there. It's so hazy. Because objectively, there's nothing which defines it. It's all what your mind creates. So it's so hazy, dualistic. Why dualistic? In your mind, you create the air. Something from the object, you create it. So the duality is there. Objective, subjective. Object and subject. This duality is created because you create this object. So this hazy, dualistic things, all nothing but all illusion, which your own mind creates. So one is that don't forget that these are all your magical illusions which your mind creates, right? Okay, let's read this. At the crossroads of the six collections of consciousness that have diverse perceptions, I see the hazy dualistic phenomena which are faceless. There's a magical show that is by nature deceptive. Don't believe it to be true, but view it as having the nature of emptiness. Don't let your mind go astray, but place it in the nature of appearance and emptiness. Through not losing mindfulness, hold it in the initial appearance and feelings. So that will be actually good. Same in the mornings. In the mornings, when you get up, then you say, when you go to wash yourself, brush yourself, and then you look at the mirror, you see yourself, even the toothbrush that you're seeing, this also dreamlike, and then this ivy, my teeth to be brushed, they're all dreamlike, and then the mirror in which I'm looking at myself, my own face, that's also dreamlike. And this face is also dreamlike. I'm also dreamlike. So this kind of awareness, this needs to be kind of, we need to build a habit. Okay, an extract from the prayers for proliferating the Dharma lotus notes. Okay, let's read this. Venerable Marpa Dilsawa, Shevya Dorje and so on, the host of the precious Gaudi, the source of blessings, the chain of Dharma excellent masters, this outstanding tradition, to you all I pray, may the Buddha Dharma at the land of snows place where I'm home. Okay, so this is the words of salutation and respect and the veneration to all these great the masters in that lineage of Jesu Marpa, Jesu Mila. So here Shevya Dorje. Shevya Dorje is Jesu Mila Rinpa, the great saint, who is respected for having achieved full enlightenment, Buddhahood within a single lifetime. Shevya Dorje, this is Jesu Mila Rinpa. Okay, so this is the word of veneration to this group, to this lineage. Another point is, in what way this lineage is so special? So then His Holiness Dalai Lama is explaining the subject matter of in what way this lineage is so special. So the subject matter says that, okay, so at first we see that everything is, okay, so confusion can be solved by this understanding. Everything that you see around, they are nothing but projected by your own mind. Right? Which means, now what is left? Your mind is left. All others are withdrawn, pulled towards your mind. Right? Now what is your mind? Your mind is left. Now His Holiness is saying that even this mind is also projected by the next moment of the mind. Even this mind is also projected by the next moment of the mind or the earlier moment of the mind. So even this mind is also projected. Which means, by this understanding, all minds that we can think of, they are somehow projected by another mind. You can't look for any mind which is not projected by any other mind. So therefore, from this we conclude that it is not just the external objects which are projected by your mind, even this mind is also projected by another mind. So that way, nothing is there which is not projected. So therefore, everything is projected. So, now what is really there? Besides projection, what is there? Nothing is there. So this experience of the emptiness, the nothingness, and what many people fall into, nihilism, these two are very different.
what people fall into nihilism and this experience. Well, what is, then what is on the object? Beyond the projection, what is there? Nothing is there. This also, we say nothing is there. Then there's also nihilism, which says nothing is there. What is the difference between the two? This is so important. Many people think that their emptiness is nihilism. Although you do know in what way emptiness is non-nihilism, because emptiness means dependent origination through the 5 points, and dependent origin means the middle way. So therefore, emptiness is not nihilism, it is the middle way. But another very sharp, way of explaining how the emptiness, this understanding, if everything is mental projected, what is more than mental projection? Nothing is there. Okay, so this nothingness and the nothingness in the sense of nihilism, these two are very different. How? So, this nothingness is in the context of the ultimate analysis. In the context of the ultimate analysis. Now, nothingness in nihilism is in the context of the conventional analysis. In the conventional analysis, if you say nothing exists, this is nihilism. Whereas in the ultimate analysis, if you say nothing exists, this is ultimate truth, it's not nihilism. It's very profound. So when you say that in the ultimate sense nothing is there, then you can put everything into conventional sense. So conventionally everything is there. Whereas if you say that conventionally nothing is there, then ultimately nothing is there, conventionally nothing is there, nothing is there then. Then it becomes, really becomes nihilism. Right? So this is the distinction. Right? So when people, if you do come up in the future, instead of saying that, oh, we went to Tishada and we went to Bodhisattva retreat, and it's amazing experience. Right? What experience? Amazing experience. In what way amazing? I learned that nothing's there. Right? This is amazing. Okay, so don't say this. Don't say this. Instead of you saying this, if somebody says that, oh, in Buddhism, it talks about nothing, it says nothing's there, self is not there, nothing is there, then you should be able to say that, no, this is not the how Buddhism understands it. Right? So how does Buddhism understand it? In what context nothingness? In the ultimate analysis. In the ultimate analysis, nothing is there. But when you say in the ultimate analysis, nothing is there means, conventionally, everything is there. Right? So whereas, what is nihilism? Nihilism is not only on the ultimate, also on the conventional, nothing is there. When you say this, then this is truly nihilism. You getting it? Okay, don't forget it. Okay, now the point is, okay, now after the, when you say that everything is mentally projected, now it seems you get the impression, it's not a mind is left. Mind is left is objectively real. Then you say that even the mind is also projected. Right? There's no mind which is not projected by any other mind. From this we come to know that, not only external objects, even the internal mind also are projected. Now what is more than projection? What is beyond the projection? What is beyond the projection? What is... Okay, what is beyond the projection? Okay, ultimate reality exists beyond the projection? If yes, then ultimate reality should exist ultimately. Beyond projection is existing ultimately. Right? Okay. So therefore, beyond projection, what exists? Nothing exists.
Nothingness do exist.
Sorry?
Nothingness does exist.
Okay. Beyond projection, nothing exists. Nothing existing beyond projection exists in the conventional sense. Nothing existing beyond convention exists in the conventional sense.
Which means that nothingness do exist.
Ultimately?
No.
Okay. Yeah. So, say, everything is mental projected. Which means, now what is beyond mental projection? Nothing is there. Okay, don't mix the two things up. Nothing is there versus nothing is there beyond projection. Don't mix the two. On the one hand, I said nothing is there. On the other hand, I'm saying nothing is there beyond projection. Beyond projection, nothing is there. These two, don't mix up the two things. Nothing is there means nihilism. Nothing is there beyond projection does not mean nihilism. Does not mean nihilism. So, nothing is there beyond projection. Does it exist? Yes. It exists where? Conventional sense. Right? Okay, don't forget it. So, with this, now the question is that when you experience, when you see nothingness, nihilism, your body will not have goosebumps. Keep this in mind. Another experiential difference. When you see, oh, there's nothing there. Law karma does not exist, Buddha does not exist, nothing exists. This is pure nothingness, pure nihilism. With nihilism, goosebumps will not be there. Instead of goosebumps, your mind becomes very hard. Right? You tend to defy all the virtues. You tend to defy compassion. When you lose compassion, the person becomes very cold. So this nothingness will make you to become a cold person. Right? Whereas with seeing the emptiness of the objective existence, it will make you a soft, gentle, kind person. So this is the experiential, the difference as a consequence. Right? This is the difference. Okay. Now with this experience is so profound. This experience is so profound. So this experience of ultimately what is there, ultimately it's a very profound experience. Very profound experience of the emptiness, profound experience of the ultimate reality. So this profound experience of the ultimate reality, this is so profound. This is so profound that it has the power to serve as a tea strainer. It has the power to serve as a tea strainer. What is the job of tea strainer? It is to hold back all the non-drinkable solid teas, right, waste teas, and let freely flow all the drinkable tea, right? So, with this wisdom of emptiness, all the positive emotions, they are freely, you know, freely exercised, freely become active. All the negative thoughts, they are being held back, and deleted, right? All the negative thoughts are deleted, and all the positive thoughts are nurtured by this wisdom emptiness. So it serves as a tea strainer. This is so important. Whereas nihilism, it will stop all the positive thoughts. Because the positive thoughts are stopped, what happens? By default, negative thoughts will get the room to arise. So this is nihilism. Okay. Page 219, the last two lines. All phenomena encompassing samsara and nirvana are by the radiance of spontaneous awareness. Spontaneous awareness means your mind. Radiance of spontaneous awareness. The awareness itself, devoid of elaborations, is realized in the nature of Dharmakaya. Pervading all existences and appearances of samsara and nirvana is a great Mahamudra. May the Buddha Dharma to let us know his place forevermore. Dharma Dada Stava in the place of Dharma Dada. Impermanence, suffering, and empty. These three they purify the mind. The Dharma that is purified, unsurpassed in purifying the mind, is the level of intrinsic nature. Okay, the next, the concluding prayer, Lama Tsongkhapa's commentary on the Arunigarjuna's fundamental wisdom of the middle way. Throughout my future lifetimes, may I always be guided by Aramajishri in being able to uphold the Dharma in general and the teachings on dependent meditation in particular, even in personal life. Okay, the next part, with folded hands. In fact, just to share my personal experience, not only the bad thing about the Rotan Pass, the good thing about the Rotan Pass, not the Rotan Pass, crossing the Rotan Pass in Lahore. So the monastery where I sat for the retreat. So from the monastery, I look at it, I could see the Tilbury, which the Tilbury is like the Bell Mountain, the Mountain of Bell. So why this is known as Tilbury, the Mountain Bell of what? Mountain of Bell was because it is believed that there was one great tantric adept, practitioner of tantra, whose name is the great saint Tilpupa. Tilpupa means the one with bell. This was his name. So it is believed that he took flight there through his medical power. And he's a great practitioner of Shri Heruka. Shri Heruka is a great, he achieves all his powerful siddhis, the feats, through the practice of Shri Heruka Tantra. So, he took a flight there, in this mountain, the mountain range, and then he made that his dwelling. So therefore, that mountain is considered to be very precious, very holy mountain. So from the meditation hut, in that monastery where I was doing my meditation retreat, from there I could see this mountain every day. So every day I could see the mountain. I just had the vision of the mountain. I recite this so many times. Yeah. Okay, so this is a good thing. Not just getting stuck in the mud. Okay, let me fold his hands. Shri Heruka, Shri Heruka, Shri Heruka. He is the synthesis of phenomena. The mind that is the source of everything is empty of true existence, as it is in purity of pure causal nature. Ru is the synthesis of person, the emptiness of the self that is fabricated by the web of conceptual thoughts that grasp at the self as a person. Ka is the ultimate reality, the absence of the dissonant duality of subject object. Shri is the non-dual exalted wisdom that abides in congruence with the emptiness of the object. This is the meaning of Evam. Okay, so now just this passage, the meaning of the Shri Heruka as interpreted. Keep in mind the sound of a clam. This sound of a clam is analogous to the miseries that we go through. Miseries which we don't like to experience. And this sound of a clam should necessarily come about through the combination of the two hands. And what are the two hands analogous to? So let's say one hand is analogous to the external objects. The other hand is analogous to the internal condition. External condition, internal condition. Say, when do we experience miseries which we dislike? It's when we start interacting with the world. You agree with me or not? It's when you start interacting with the world. Say, the morning you wake up and it's so freezing cold, then you may start cursing the Dharamsala weather. Right? You become so angry, upset. The moment you wake up, it's so upsetting. You don't want to get up at all. And the bell rings. Right? So say, it is the external condition which is freezing cold as the external condition. And there's the internal condition inside. Self-grasping ignorance and self-centered attitude. Right? And particularly, say, self-grasping ignorance. Okay. So, we see that when these two things come together, then we see that the problems arise which we dislike. The problems which we dislike, they all arise. Okay. Now, let's say that, say, misperception, external condition and internal condition. Misperception of the internal condition and the misperception of the external condition. The two misperceptions. You getting it? Say, misperception, internal condition, let's say misperception pertaining to see I, right? Okay, I, why should all these miseries come to me? Why me? Always there's reference to the self. It becomes self-referential. Always I. Okay, so this is the person. Now, then, I what? Why these problems should be always with me? These problems are what? These problems are the phenomena other than this person who experiences the pains. Right? So the problems arise when the two things come together. One is the self, you as a person, and the world, other phenomena. The phenomena other than the self as the world with which you interact. You're getting it? To make it simple, say the self, I, and the phenomena other than the self, when these two interact, then the miseries come into being. You agree with me now? The person, and the phenomena other than the person, too. So therefore, the Buddha Shakyamuni very clearly explained that this person, say the two hands, one hand, which is like the person, other hand, which is a phenomenon other than the person, these two interact and the sound comes out. So, when you have the misperception of the person, seeing the person is so objectively real, one, and seeing the objects, the phenomena with which you interact, they are seen so objectively real. Misperception of the person, what is the misperception of the person? Seeing this eye as objectively real. Then, misperception of the phenomena other than the person, what is that? seeing the phenomena other than the person as objectively real. When these two misperceptions meet, then the sound of the miseries automatically is given rise to. The sound of the miseries is automatically given rise to, right? Okay. Now, if you don't want the miseries, what should you do? If you don't want the sound of the miseries, what should you do? You should stop one of the two hands. If possible, stop both hands. If not, at least stop one of the hands. Getting it? Okay. So how to stop the one of the hands? Say, misperception pertaining to the self, misperception pertaining to the phenomena other than the self. So, say, how will you eradicate the misperception pertaining to the self? What is that thing? Misperception pertaining to self? The self-grasping ignorance. Right? Ignorance which views the self to be objectively real. Right? Now, how to remove this self-grasping ignorance? By introducing the wisdom. The wisdom which sees the emptiness of the person. Wisdom which sees the emptiness of the person. Now, technically it is also referred to as the wisdom which sees the emptiness of the person, selflessness of the person. These two mean the same. The wisdom which sees the selflessness of the person or emptiness of the person. These two mean the same. So therefore, in order to have the wisdom which sees the emptiness, wisdom which sees the selflessness of the person, what should you know? In order to have the wisdom which sees the selflessness of the person, what should you know? You should know the selflessness of the person. So therefore, the Buddha explained the selflessness of the person. One. Now, you can remove the other hand also. Other hand is what? Ignorance, the misperception, which views the phenomena other than the self as objectively real. So to remove this misperception, what should you do? You should see, we should have the wisdom which sees the emptiness of phenomena. Right? So, technically it is said as the wisdom which sees the selflessness of phenomena. Right? So to have the wisdom which sees the selflessness of phenomena, what should you know? What should you know? Let me say this again. To have the wisdom which sees the selflessness of the phenomena, what should you know? Emptiness of the phenomena or the selflessness of the phenomena, right? Now we see that the selflessness or the emptiness, many times the Buddha talked about selflessness instead of using the word emptiness. Other times the Buddha used the word emptiness. So in a loose sense, these two can be equated. In a loose sense, not in a strict sense. In a strict sense, selflessness itself can have many layers, in a very strict sense. In a loose sense, the selflessness and the emptiness, they mean the same. So now from this, what we can know is that emptiness is explained in two ways. Emptiness of the person and emptiness of the phenomena. Likewise, selflessness of the person and selflessness of phenomena. You getting it? You getting it? Okay. So okay. Now look. If you cultivate a very intense experience of the selfness of the person, then the misperception pertaining to self is dissolved. So one hand is dissolved. Then the other hand may be there, misperception pertaining to the phenomenon is there, but because the one hand is already pulled back, so it's only one hand. One hand, but the one hand, however forceful this is, the sound is not created. So the sound of misery stops. Or another possibility would be, dissolve the misperception of the phenomena, right? And you may have the misperception of the person, but if you dissolve the misperception of the phenomena, then the other hand is removed and one hand is left, and with this one hand, again, there is no sound of the miseries. Whereas if you could dissolve both, that is best, right? So how do you dissolve both? As far as you see emptiness non-dualistically. If you see emptiness non-dualistically, you see the selfness of the person as well as the selfness of phenomena by a single mind. By a single mind, you will see the emptiness of all phenomena if you see emptiness non-dualistically. Okay, now there are three synonyms for seeing emptiness non-dualistically. There are three synonyms. Seeing emptiness non-dualistically. Realizing emptiness non-dualistically, this one. Then, or seeing emptiness directly, number two. Then number three, seeing emptiness non-conceptually. Three. These three are synonymous. Non-dualistic experience of emptiness, direct experience of emptiness, and non-conceptual experience of emptiness. These three mean the same. Non-dualistic experience of emptiness, and non-conceptual experience of emptiness. Three. These three are same. Non-dualistic experience of emptiness, direct experience of emptiness, non-conceptual experience of emptiness. These two mean same, right? Okay. Now, so what we have been studying so far, this is all according to very standard highway system of Nalanda tradition, according to Aranyagarjuna, according to Acharya Chandragupti. So all these great masters of Nalanda, very systematic version of the study of Nalanda tradition, right? So what I'm saying is that non-conceptual experience, they all meant what these words really mean. Whereas there are some other traditions, we don't mix up the two things. Some other traditions, they may say that, oh, so we will just bypass many other paths and we will just cut through and have the non-dual experience, have the non-conceptual experience. So these amazing, elegant words would be used by some other traditions, right? Say, these words which are used by other traditions may not really mean the meanings, the reference as used by the mainstream Nalanda tradition. Keep this in mind, right? Say there could be two ways. One who go through all the proper PhD programs, and other who may not go through PhD program, just have the gist of everything, and then start a program. Right? Start a program. There could be two programs. So the Nalanda's main tradition, so they, whatever words are being used, they really mean it that way. Whereas the same way how it is studied in the Buddhist psychology, epistemology, and logic may not be understood in the same context by the other traditions within Buddhism. In other words, within Buddhism we see that there may be several traditions. One which follow the very systematic the format of the Nalanda's tradition, and others which may take the essence out of that, and the vocabulary wise they may use it very loosely. They may use the vocabulary. So therefore, you may say, so when will you have this experience of the non-dual experience, realization of emptiness? Gate, gate, paragate, parasangate, bodhisa, where five? Don't just say recite gate, gate. Say, where will you have this experience of non-dual experience of emptiness? Paragate, only paragate, right? It is impossible that you have the non-dual experience or non-conceptual experience of that before you reach paragade. And many people, they will explain to you that you can reach it before that. Which means they are understanding what they mean by non-conceptual experience and what is meant by non-conceptual experience according to the Nalanda's mainstream philosophy is very different. Right? Don't mix up the two things. Because people don't want to go for the more difficult, the difficulties, right? So somebody says that somebody advertised something very simple and which bears the same terminology as these things. Oh, I prefer that, right? Very unfortunate. It says, okay, I will not say self-deception, but it's not true. It does not mean the other traditions are bad. That's not true. Other traditions excellently, they're equally very excellent. But how they use the vocabularies, don't mix up with the Nalanda's main tradition. Okay. Now we will turn to In Praise of Dependent Origination. Page. In Praise of Dependent Origination. This book. I hope you all have this book. In Praise of Dependent Origination. Where is the page number? Where's it? You have the table of contents? We have that verse it in praise of dependent origination. Okay, page 52. In praise of dependent origination. Okay. In praise of dependent origination. The full form of this title is In Praise of Buddha Shakyamuni for His Teaching Dependent Origination. This is the full form. In praise of Buddha Shakyamuni for His Teaching Dependent Origination. Okay. So whatever we have learned so far, you will, as we read this, as I explain this, you will see that all will come mentioned in these stanzas. So this text, In Praise of Dependent Origination, was written by Lama Tsongkhapa. And Lama Tsongkhapa, who is the greatest Madhyamika philosopher, emptiness philosopher in Tibet. The greatest Madhyamika philosopher in Tibet. Okay, so the story has it that what made him to compose this text was that at one point he became so popular, he had so many students, and he himself was also engaged in intense learning, reflection and meditation on emptiness and teaching emptiness. At one point he got a very profound experience, and he was just wondering whether this experience of emptiness tallies with the emptiness according to the highest Buddhist school. What is highest Buddhist school? Prasangika Madhyamika school. Prasangika Madhyamika school. So he was just wondering whether this experience that he was getting tallies with that of Prasangika Madhyamika's view of the emptiness. Then At that point, he was not having the vision of Arimanjushri. He was not having the vision of Arimanjushri. Lama Tsongkhapa here. Lama Tsongkhapa. At that point, he was not having the vision of Arimanjushri. He was not having meeting with Arimanjushri directly. So there was another Lama, whose name is Lama Umapa. Lama Umapa. He used to have a direct vision of Arimanjushri. He would just invoke Arimanjushri. Arimanjushri would appear. Then he would ask questions to Arimanjushri. Seek advice from Arimanjushri. Arimanjushri will give teachings to him directly. Lama Umapa. Then Lama Tsongkhapa and Lama Umapa, two of them are mutual students. Meaning that Lama Tsongkhapa learned many things from Lama Umapa. Lama Umapa also learned many things from Lama Tsongkhapa. Two of them are more like mutual students. Then Lama Tsongkhapa made the request to Lama Umapa, on behalf that the request be made to Arimanjushri. One, to double check if Lama Tsongkhapa's recent experience of emptiness tallies with that of the Prasangika's version of the emptiness. Then Lama Umapa reported this to Arimanjushri. Then Arimanjushri's response is what? Response is that no, it is not. It is not. But if Lama Tsongkhapa puts effort in three ways, very soon he will have a very profound and sharp and deep experience, very crystal clear experience of emptiness according to Prasangika. So this was the advice given by Arimanjushri to Lama Tsongkhapa through Lama Umapa. Then, what are the 3 points? The 3 points Arimanjushri enumerated. Okay, before that, the Arimanjushri said that, okay, yeah, the 3 points. Arimanjushri said that the first point is that he should actually he should be engaged in very intensive practice of purification. And accumulation merit, like mantle offering, right? Mantle offering, practice of purification, like making prostrations, Vajrasattva recitations, meditating emptiness, and so forth. One. The second one is that he should make fervent prayers to his root guru in the light of the mentor or the patron deity, in the light of the patron deity. For example, if you have Aratara as your patron deity, then you can view your guru in the light of Aratara and then say fervent prayers to Aratara. This is number 2. Making prayers to the guru, seen as one with the patron deity. Then number 3, that he should engage in intense study and reflection and meditation on the teaching, on the concept of emptiness, as explicated by the Indian masters. As explicated by the Indian masters like Arindagarjuna, Aridev, Acharya Chandrakriti, and so forth. Okay, so these are the 3 conditions or the factors with Aramanjushri advice for Lama Tsongkhapa to follow, so that very near in time he would have a crystal clear experience of emptiness according to Prasanga Madhyamika. Then people coming to know about this, that how should he be intensely doing all these things? How can he possibly intensively engaged in purification, mudra offering, and then studying and so forth, while at the same time teaching is impossible? Which means that he has to sacrifice one of them. Either he has to sacrifice what Lama Tsongkhapa Manjushri advised, or he has to negotiate with the giving extensive teachings to the public. So the public hearing about that, public says that no, this should not happen. This should not happen. If Lama Tsongkhapa leaves for retreat, then who is going to take care of us? So public says that no, this is not permissible. Right? And the matter was reported to Aramanjushri. Then Aramanjushri said that, if you ask me as to what is the future, then I know the future. I know the future. So therefore I'm telling you this. Right? And if you say that the public is backbiting me, right, then be patient. If the public is not in favor of what you going on solitude for practice, then be patient. Be patient meaning, okay, ignore what the public says. Right? And if you want to know what the future is what I'm telling you. Right? And if you can't bear what the public is saying, ignore that. Right? Okay. So these, and then what happened? Then Lama Tsongkhapa and his 8 close disciples, he took along with him 8 close disciples along with him to the solitude in hermitage. So there, then he was engaged in say mantle offering. Usually we have very white, like this, very but exquisitely beautiful mantalas. But Lama Tsongkhapa now depicted as, you know, in a very nicely, what do you call that? The dress. No. Right? He did not have even a proper mantle offering set. Right? He was so popular all over Tibet. But in terms of possession, he was not keeping any possession. He did not have even a proper mantle set. So where did he offer all the mantala? On a stone slab. Then he was rubbing his hand like this on the slabs, like this. And they, eventually, all this just it all became turned sore and blood coming out. Still, he was offering the mandala, right? He was already a highly evolved being, and still he was engaged in all these virtues, engaging in purification of the merits, and then making prostrations for purification and so forth. Right? Okay. So it is believed that this stone, the stone slab on which the Lama Tsongkhapa made the offering of the mandala, is still preserved in Tibet. So it is believed that it is there. Okay. So whatever the case, he did that, and then within 11 months, he had the first crystal clear experience of emptiness according to Prasangika view. The moment he had this experience, incredibly profound, which has no contradiction with the conventional functionings, contain the functions of the functions of the world. No contradiction. The two simply go so seamlessly in harmony. So this was what he saw, and he was so fascinated. And he he saw that this is the final, the panacea to overcome all our problems, all our miseries. And seeing the wonder of this experience, instantly he wrote the praise to the Buddha Shakyamuni for having taught this experience. He realized that this experience is so profound. It's so profound. And this is the final medicine to cure all of the mental ills, all our problems. And this, who taught this? Is the Buddha Shakyamuni. So he instantly jotted down this praise to Buddha Shakyamuni for his teaching this dependent origination. Okay, so therefore, this text is particularly so precious, because this is text which simply exudes his experience of the direct experience of emptiness, crystal clear experience of emptiness, which he had for the first time. Okay, so this is what we are studying together now. Stanza 1. He who speaks on the... No, you are not reading this. I'll read this and I'll explain this. He who speaks on the basis of the sea, this makes him a knower and teacher unexcelled. I bow to you, O conqueror, who holds so dependent origination and taught it. He who speaks, he referring to Buddha Shakyamuni, he who speaks on the basis of seeing. So what the dependent origination, which the Buddha taught, was not taught like how I'm teaching. I teach without any experience of myself. I still learn from my teachers, and I'm now handing down to you, right? Not through my experience, but through simply what I've heard from my teachers. Whereas how the Buddha Shakyamuni taught was not like that. He experienced it himself and then he taught. He who speaks on emptiness or dependent origination on the basis of seeing, this makes him a knower, and this makes him a teacher unexcelled. I bow to you, O conqueror, the conqueror meaning the Buddha Shakyamuni, who conquered all the four demons through the power of the wisdom of emptiness and bodhicitta. The conqueror, you who saw dependent origination and taught it. Number 2. Whatever degenerations there are in the world, degenerations meaning all the miseries, all what we dislike, all the pains, all the fears, they exist in the world. The root of all these is ignorance. So now, from this, now that we are already introduced to the earlier concepts, you see that what is being said here, it simply resonates so well with what we have learned. The root of all these is ignorance. Which ignorance?
Self-grasping
ignorance. Very good. You taught that it is dependent origination, the seeing of which will undo this ignorance. Dependent origination, how many levels of dependent origination are there?
Three.
What are there? The cause-effect relationship. The dependent origination of the results, dependence on cause, one. Number 2. Dependent origination of dependence, the whole's dependence on parts. Number 2, what is 3? Okay, it's so like I'm your servant. I have to say all the things complete. You will say the gist and then I will say everything. Right? It's like I'm anyway, thank you. In my next life, I have no difficulty. In my next life, it'll become so easy for me. Right? So you are giving me the exercise. Okay, so what is the third one? Dependent origination of dependence on mere mental imputation. Thank you. Okay. So of the three, what is being said here? Stanza 2, line 3. You taught that it is dependent origination. This is the third level of dependent origination, not the first and second. You taught that it is dependent origination, the seeing of which will undo this ignorance. Seeing the third level of dependent origination will help you to undo this. Which ignorance? Self-grasping ignorance. Number 3. So how can an intelligent person not comprehend that this part of dependent origination is the essential point of your teaching? So look, this is... So just reading his words make your hair stand on end. How clear and how insightful, how comprehensive, right? And how intelligent. So it says that, so how can an intelligent person not comprehend that this path of dependent origination is the essential point of your teaching. Meaning that of all the different teachings you, the Buddha Shakyamuni, gave, if someone is really intelligent and if somebody has really learned all your teachings, you will see that this intelligent person will see the teaching of dependent origination as the supreme of your teaching. Right? So how can an intelligent person not comprehend that this part of dependent origination is the essential point of your teaching? Number four. This being so, who will find, O Savior? Savior meaning the Buddha Shakyamuni, who saves all sentient beings by teaching this dependent origination to eliminate self-grasping ignorance, which is the root of all miseries. This being so, who will find, O Savior, a more wonderful way to praise you than to praise you for having taught this origination through dependence? So Arunigarjuna, in all his major writings, how he always made solution to Buddha Shakyamuni was praising Buddha Shakyamuni for his having taught dependent origination. Always. Okay. So, number four. This being so, who will find, O Savior, a more wonderful way to praise you than to praise you for having taught this origination through dependence? Okay. So, I meant to praise one deity, and I may say, oh, this deity is so powerful. Wow, how? Because if he gets angry, he can destroy everything. Is it praise or is it denigration? Defamation or praise? Huh? Is it a praise or it is defamation? It's a defamation, actually. Which means that this is not really God. It's a demon. It can easily become... He is so weak, so vulnerable. Vulnerable to anger. Right? When anger, he destroys others. He has no love for others. Right? And then if you're not intelligent, right? You may try to praise this deity by saying that he's so powerful, right? We should surrender, we should worship this so that we'll get everything from him, right? The moment you do something bad, he'll destroy you. Right? This is where you're praying. So therefore, this is defamation. It is not praising, actually. So whereas if you praise someone by saying that, by pinpointing to something which, understand which makes the self happier, makes others happier, right? Then this is real praise. Okay. Number four. Whatsoever depends on conditions, that is devoid of intrinsic existence. What excellent instruction can they be more amazing than this proclamation? Whatever it depends on conditions, meaning things coming into being, not independently, but by dependence on other factors, other conditions. So those things which comes into being by dependence, this, you, the Buddha, said that that is devoid of intrinsic existence. That the moment things are dependent, which means things do not have intrinsic existence, things do not have objective existence, things are all dreamlike. What excellent instruction can there be more amazing than this proclamation? By grasping at it, the child is strengthened bondage to extreme views. For the wise, the very fact is the doorway to cut free of the nether elaborations. Okay, six needs to be explained. Say, now, what is the point? What is that point, the teaching of which the Buddha was praised for by Lama Tsongkhapa? What is that point? Huh? Dependent origination, very good. Dependent origination. Now, let's say, dependent origination has how many levels?
Three
levels. And of the four Buddhist schools, okay, of the four Buddhist schools, some people, they are a little confused. Four Buddhist schools means, oh, Sakya, Pakyu, Nyingma, Gelug, right? And His Holiness the Dalai Lama is head of the Gelug. This is a total confusion. Okay, so this is a little digression. Forget about Sakya, Nyingma, Pakyu, Gelug. Forget about that. This is, at the time of the Buddha, there's no division, Sakya, Pakyu, Gelug, Nyingma. There's no division. So many people think that I am Kaki, right? I am Gelug, I am Nyingma. This is poison. Before that, if possible, learn to say, I'm following a teacher who teaches unconditional love. rather than saying, I'm following the teacher, who is Guru, who is Kadgu. Before that, you just be able to say that I'm following the teacher, who is referred to as Buddha Shakyamuni, who taught unconditional love for all sentient beings, who does not discriminate anything, who is against sectarianism. Just say this. Don't qualify yourself as I'm Gilu, I'm Nyingma, it's a poison. You came to spirituality in order to run away from spirituality. Right? You came to spirituality to embrace spirituality. And what you have learned? How to disembrace, how to dissociate yourself from the spirituality. Right? Okay. So the four schools, the Tibetan school, just forget about it. It's just nothing. So just learn how to follow the Nalanda tradition. That's good enough. Right? And then say, in terms of the Nalanda tradition, in terms of the subtlety of the philosophy, in terms of the subtlety of the philosophy, there are four in the Nalanda tradition. Vaibhashika, which we already learned earlier. Vaibhashika, Sautantrika, Chetamatra, and Madhyamika, four. The four schools. Now, of the four schools, on the one hand we have the four schools, on the other hand we have what? We have the three levels of dependent origination. On the other hand, we have the three levels of dependent origination. Now, which of the school understand which of the three levels of dependent origination? This is what I'd like to explain to you. Right? The third one, third level of dependent origination, third level which is dependent origination of dependence on mere mental imputation. So this level of dependent origination is understood only by the fourth school of philosophy, which is Madhyamika, and particularly Prasangika Madhyamika, right? Okay. Now, the first one, what is the first level of dependent origination? Dependent origination of the results depending on the causes. Results dependent on the causes. So causal dependent origination. Causal dependent origination is understood by all the four Buddha schools. All the four Buddha schools. Right? Causal dependent origination is understood by all the four Buddha schools, whereas the third one is understood only by the Prasangikas. And the middle one is understood by the third and the fourth Buddha schools. Chittamatra and Madhyamika school. Okay. Now with this, the first level of dependent origination, in general, first level of dependent origination is applicable only to the composite phenomena. First level of dependent origination is applicable only to composite phenomena, not to all phenomena. Not to the non-composite phenomena. First level of dependent origination, cause-effect relationship. First level of dependent origination is synonymous with cause-effect relationship. And the cause-effect relationship is applicable only to the composite phenomena or the impermanent phenomena. Only applicable to the impermanent phenomena. Composite phenomena, impermanent phenomena, these two are synonymous. Composite phenomena, impermanent phenomena, these two are synonymous. You're getting it? Okay. So, the first level of dependent origination is applicable only to impermanent phenomena, not to the permanent phenomena. Okay, now, what is this? Is this the fourth day or fifth day or the sixth day of the retreat? Seventh day. By now, you must be, your doubts must have been cleared about what is composite phenomena. What is the non-composite phenomena? What is the permanent phenomena other than ultimate reality? You know that already? Huh? You're very clear about it? Crystal clear? Huh? Kate, crystal clear? Yes? Huh? Okay. Anyone who likes to, impure phenomena, there are three natures. What are the three nations? Very good. Impure nature, other power nature, power of established nature, you remember that? Okay. Under impure phenomena, what qualifies, what falls under impure nature? What examples do you have for imputed nature?
Non-existence.
The permanent phenomena other than Atman reality. Very good. Okay. So, okay. Did we learn, by the way, I don't remember too well. Did we learn that all phenomena that exist in the universe, they fall under, all anything that exists in the, that comes to mind, falls under these three natures? Did we learn that? Maybe not in last life? We learned that. Oh, the first day. Oh, I see. We learned that. Which means, okay, first tell me, what falls under the first nature? What is the first nature? Imputed nature. Okay, that's people. What is the second nature? Other part of nature. What falls under other part of nature? All impermanent phenomena. Very good. All impermanent phenomena falls under other part of nature. Meaning, other part of nature and impermanent phenomena, these two are synonymous. What falls under thoroughly established nature? All ultimate reality, all emptinesses. In other words, ultimate reality and thoroughly established nature, these two are synonymous, right? Now what is left? What is left? All impermanent phenomena are gone, ultimate reality is gone, what is left? Imputed nature, say non-existence is left, and? There is no ultimate reality other than emptiness. Ultimate reality and emptiness, these are synonymous. Say it again. Permanent phenomena other than ultimate reality. So non-existence is left and permanent phenomena other than ultimate reality is left. These two things are left. So these two fall in the category of imputed nature. So the imputed nature, okay. Imputed nature. Before that what does it mean by other part of nature? What is the etymology? What's the etymology of other part of nature?
Condition.
So let's say other powered. Very good. But I just say very good. Which means it's good, but it needs a little bit of extension.
Phenomena that are powered by other sources.
Okay. I said what? Okay. Anyone? Okay, let's say anything which comes into existence by the power of other causes. Anything which comes into existence by the power of other causes, other powered. Powered by other causes. Anything which comes into being, powered by other causes, or anything which comes into being by the power of other causes. This is known as other part phenomena. This is synonymous with impermanent phenomena, composite phenomena, other part phenomena, impermanent phenomena, composite phenomena. These three are synonymous. You getting it? Okay. Now, thoroughly established. Thoroughly established. What's the etymology? Thoroughly established. Something which is established, which cannot have a subtler reality. Something which is established, which cannot have a subtler reality than that. Thoroughly established. So thoroughly established that there's no subtler reality than that. Thoroughly established. Which implies ultimate reality. Which is anything which is established, anything which is established so thoroughly that it does not have there's no other thing which is a subtler reality than it. Something which is so thoroughly established that you don't find any other subtler reality than that. Something which is so thoroughly established that there's no other subtler reality than that. This thoroughly established. Okay. Verse number 3. If other power is done, thoroughly established done, what is left now? Imputed nature. Okay. Imputed nature, I will explain this and then you can extend it to the its illustrations. Okay, let's see. Okay. Let's see. What is on my hand? a flower, right? A flower. Some of you, without looking at it, knows that he must have a flower on his hand. So without looking at it, you would say flower. Okay, so there's a flower there. Now let me say, what is there in my hand? Yes. Nothing is there. Absence of the flower is there or not?
Yes.
Absence of the flower is there or not? Absence of the flower is there. So what is the difference between the flower is existent? Here. Now I remove the flower. Absence of the flower is existent. Right? The two things, let me put it like this. Okay, in my right hand is the flower. In my right hand, the flower exists. In my left hand, the absence of the flower exists. Right? In my right hand, the flower exists. In my left hand, absence of the flower exists. Right? What? What no? To both or to one or which? In my right hand, the flower exists. You agree? In my left hand, absence of the flower exists. Okay. In my left hand, there's a flower, no flower. There's no flower.
No,
is this flower, does this, my left hand, does it have a flower?
No.
Is it empty of flower?
Yes.
No, is it empty of flower?
No.
My left hand?
Yes.
Is it a flower? No, is there a flower?
No.
What is the full sentence? There is no flower in my left hand. Exactly, yeah. There's no tiger in my left hand. Okay. The flower exists in my right hand. Tiger exists in my left hand. No. So if flower is a problem, let's move it to tiger. It's fine. Okay. In my right hand, the flower exists. In my left hand, absence of the tiger exists. Yes, no?
Yes.
Good. Okay. So now, do you see the difference between the existence of the existence, two existences, just compare. Both exist in my two hands. One is the flower exists. What is that thing which exists? The flower. In my left hand, what is that thing that exists? Absence of the tiger. Right? So tell me, what is the difference between the two? In what way the difference is there? Yes, over there, Linda? Okay, what is positive phenomena? What is negative phenomena? Very good. Yes, yes. Do you see my facial expression? Very good. Which means, I fully agree with you, but I'm not getting what I'm looking for. Very good. Yes?
One exists objectively and the other one exists subjectively. Because one, you see it in your mind.
Okay. You understand what I'm saying? Okay. Anyone else? Yes, over there? Okay, very interesting. Anything, anyone else? Okay. Anyone else? Okay, so say, here, is there a substance? A solid substance there? A solid substance there? Is there a substance there as absence of tiger? Substance there?
No.
No substance. One has a substance. Other doesn't have a substance. If there is a substance, as what Daisy said, if there is a substance, it has the connotation. In a loose sense, not in the subtle philosophical sense, in a loose sense, it's a connotation. Because it is a substance, it exists from the object. Now, I'm not talking from the point of view of the high school school. I'm not talking from the point of view of the high school. From the point of view of the overall Buddhist schools, general Buddhist schools. Okay, so the substance is there. So in general Buddhism, when you say objective existence there, you may say, okay, yes, to comply with the lower schools. But Prasangi does not accept that. So this flower has a connotation of a substance there, because of which, even if you leave this hall, the substance will continue. Whereas this absence of the tiger is very much like my dream. Absence of the tiger is not from the object. There's no substance there. Right? If it does exist, it is not existing from the substance. It's coming from the mind. So the mind imputes. So that the absence of the tiger is a mental imputation. Right? Which of the three natures we are talking about? Which of the three natures I'm trying to explain to you now? Imputed nature. Thoroughly separate natures already explained. Other power natures already explained. Now I'm explaining imputed nature. Meaning, something which your mind imputes in the absence of a substance. Right? Something which your mind imputes in the absence of a substance. This is known as imputed nature. You getting it? Okay, so the absence of the tiger does not have a substance there to hold on to, say, this is an absent tiger. No, it does not have a substance. But it does exist. So, because it does not have a substance, from the object side, there's nothing there as a substance. So now, if it does exist, it exists from the mind imputing it, mental imputation. So therefore, the absence of the tiger is an imputed nature. It's an imputed nature. Yes, Tim?
Can this be a positive phenomenon? Can something with imputed nature be a positive phenomenon?
Imputed nature, okay, this is a good question.
For example, if you say, what is in my hand, you say nothing.
Yes.
And you don't have to negate something.
In your hand there's a book. Okay, now yeah. Without taking, remove the book, then there's nothing there. So,
yeah.
So imputed nature is the more negative phenomena, which rejects the existence of something, right?
Yeah, but just the thing, like the word nothing.
Yeah.
Like, if you're asking, you're saying this without negating something.
Yeah. Nothing means existence is negated. Yeah. Existence is negated.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. When Tim smiles, which means he surrenders.
But, yeah, if you also see it like, from our conventional view, you go outside of our universe, and like, there's nothing, like, which is there, which is just not, like, you can't get it with our mind, but there must be some kind of nothing. And you look at this, like, this kind of nothing in the mind.
Oh, it must be a deep philosophy, I don't understand it. What did you say? This nothingness and the another nothingness, there's a difference?
So the picture of our universe is that it's expanding.
The universe is expanding, yes?
So it must be expanding somewhere, so the nothing.
It must be expanding in the space. So?
Okay, so there's also the difference between
the space? And the nothingness. Exactly, yeah. There's the difference between space and nothingness, yes. Because the space, there are two kinds. Composite space and non-composite space. Okay. So now, the same, imputed nature means something which does not exist as a substance, but existing purely through the power of mental imputation, like the absence of the tiger. As the tiger does not have a substance there, right? So you just negate something, and then in your mind, essence of a tiger comes to your mind. That's it. This is how your mind imbues something without the absence, something which your mind imputes without a substance there. Okay. So with this, there's one debate, which is same with the composite phenomena. There's the substance. There's a substance. Composite phenomena. What does it mean by composite phenomena? What are the synonyms of composite phenomena?
Impermanent.
Huh? Impermanent phenomena. Very good. Composite phenomena. Impermanent phenomena. What else? Okay. Impermanent phenomena. Composite phenomena. Then? Other powered phenomena. Very good. These three are synonyms. Other part phenomena, impermanent phenomena, and composite phenomena. These three are synonymous, right? These three are synonymous. Okay, the impermanent phenomena, they all have some substance there. For example, this flower, is it impermanent phenomena or what? Yes, no?
Yes.
So, this impermanent phenomena, it has a substance. Does it have a substance?
Yes.
It has a substance. Okay. What about thoroughly established nature? Does it have substance? Yes, no? Thoroughly established phenomenon, does it have substance?
No.
See, what is thoroughly established phenomenon? This flower is empty of objective existence.
It has substance, the flower has.
No, the flower has substance, but of the two isolates, the flower is the isolate, and the emptiness, the flower's being empty of objective existence is another isolate. So the second isolate, emptiness of objective existence, does it have a substance?
Yes.
It does not have a substance. This flower is empty of, there's no objective existence. Where is the emptiness of objective existence? You can't locate it. It does not have a substance. Right? It does not have a substance. So emptiness, is it an imputed phenomena? Emptiness, is it an imputed phenomena? Yes, no. Why not?
Yes.
Why yes? Why no? What do you mean by one no?
Emptiness comes from subjective existence and we first impute object.
Oh, okay. Emptiness has a connotation of something coming into being through subjective existence.
Yeah.
So there should be no substance.
Exactly.
Okay. Wow. Right? Okay, that's very good. Okay. Very good. This thought needs to be nurtured further. It's a very, very good thought, but nurtured further, which means, it's very good. It needs nurture. It needs to be nurtured further.
Okay.
Means, it's a very good concept, very good concept, and it has to be further improved, right? So, when you have this concept, if you improve further, then you will get a very clear picture of what is emptiness. Okay, anyone else? What's my question? I forgot my question. Is the emptiness of the flower imputed or not? Or is the emptiness of the flower, does it have substance, is my question. Does it have substance?
Yes.
It does not have substance, you said it.
It does have substance.
It does. How?
Because emptiness is form, the form is emptiness, and that emptiness is not other than form.
Yes, yes, yes. So, substance is emptiness, emptiness is substance, is what you're saying.
It's not other than substance.
No, what do you... My question is, does emptiness has substance, is my question.
Because it's
negative. Substance. And then you can apply this Har Sutra thing. Instead of form is empty, you can say substance is emptiness.
Yes.
That was the second one.
Mm-hmm.
Emptiness is substance. If it is substance, it should have substance.
Yes.
Right? Okay. So it is substance, is emptiness is substance. Is substance. And this flower is substance. These two are very different. Right? Emptiness is substance. Emptiness is form. What is the meaning? How do you understand it? It is not understood the way the ordinary people understands it. Oh, this flower is gold, which means that the same person who sees the flower should see it as a gold, right? But emptiness is form. It's not the same person who sees the emptiness as a form. Look at this flower through you are looking at this flower through ultimate analysis. What do you see?
Nothing.
You see the emptiness of the flower.
No.
I don't see. Right? So you are looking at it through ultimate analysis. What do you see now?
Yeah.
Emptiness of flower. What do I see? I'm looking at it through conventional analysis. What do you see? Okay, flower is emptiness. The flower is emptiness. Emptiness is flower. So this is not this one line is not seen by one person. What you see as emptiness is what I see as flower. This meaning of emptiness is flower. Right? Whereas when you say the flower is yellow, oh no, the flower is white. What's your name?
Abby.
So Abby is the one who sees the flower, and Abby is the one who sees this flower to be yellow or to be white. Right? It's the same person who sees that. Flower is yellow. Flower is substance. It's the same person who's seeing it. But the emptiness is the form. It's not seen by one person. What is seen as emptiness by someone else is seen as formed by another person. So this is very different. You getting it? Okay. By the way, it's already 10:53. A tea break? A tea break. Second session, we will do the same meditation on bodhicitta. And the afternoon session, we will continue with this. Oh, we are not yet. We are yet finished. Okay, afternoon we will continue with the bodhicitta. Yeah.
Schedule the third person.